Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program this week. My guest is Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. We'd love to have your questions for him in our next half an hour. You can call those in to area code 765-496-1999. You can send an email to ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon. As I said to you off air, it feels like it's been a long time since we've spoken.
It has been, yeah. You know, the summer is flying by.
That's true, but we were happy to have Charlotte on the program last month. You'll get to hear Emily Seiberg next month as we're going through some hosting. I'll call it giving myself something of a hosting vacation over the summer. So
there you go. I wasn't sure if it was just me or if you were just spreading it around.
No, I'm definitely spreading it around. So all of you get much nicer hosts for a couple of months this summer than you typically have.
They're doing well, though.
They are doing well, and it's nice to have them. Let's start with a question from a listener. Brett wrote in since you were last on the show, and he wants to know a little bit about internet and cable availability. So I'll start out by saying this is probably a better question for county leaders, and I've kind of paraphrased what he's saying, but I think I get the gist. Brett says he's considering buying a home in the county outside of the city limits, and he wants to know if there are any incentives that the county can offer those communication companies to increase their level of investment in Montgomery County. He seems to say there's a limiting factor there in keeping people from moving to Montgomery County. And I wondered, first of all, is this a concern you hear with any frequency?
Well, it is a concern we hear, and I don't think it's really limited to Montgomery County. I think we hear it across the state in rural areas. And I know that the Office of Community and Rural Affairs and the Lieutenant Governor's offices is working on this particular issue statewide. Like I said, it's something that we do hear about. Actually just heard one of our school superintendents speak about this morning, in that you have this uneven playing field, if you will. If you have devices in the schools, tablets or whatever, and you send students home with homework, some have access to the internet and high speed, and others may not have any access at all. So it creates a tough situation, and I have absolutely no doubt that it's, impeding home sales in some of those areas. That being said, and you're right, it is a county issue. There are, tools that you can use as an incentive. We've done that within the city of Crawfordsville. We actually have a TIF district that's made up of the fiber network in our community, and that helps incentivize bringing something to the community. That's available statewide. It's a different dynamic, of course, when you're dealing with areas outside the city, because you don't have that density of population, and it kind of harkens back to the days of rural electric, justifying the cost to run the electric lines all the way back this road to one house or one customer. So it is a very difficult thing, and I know there are many, many people working on it right now. And we'll have to see how it plays out. But keep in mind that it's a very expensive proposition to get high speed to some of these rural areas, because you just don't have the customer base to support it.
I was looking at a broadband map of Indiana this morning, and I found that even getting 25 megabit service, which is, it seems to me, the base level offered by most cable providers now, is kind of hard to get outside of Crawfordsville proper. And so your city, of course, contains almost half the county's population. It makes economic sense for better high-speed internet to be there because, as you pointed out, there's a greater concentration of customers. Is it reasonable to believe, as Brett seems to say, that people aren't moving to your area because they would have to live in the city limits to have access to some of those amenities?
Well, it could be a factor. It absolutely could be a factor. And, again, you have to step back and look at this and look at it through the lens of these, telecommunications companies who would invest this money. And they're not in this to lose money, for sure. So they have to make decisions in which, they can at least make some profit or even break even, and right now to build that infrastructure out in those very rural areas is challenging and problematic. And that's probably becoming more of a factor in home buying than it's ever been. If you have you know, if you're doing things, you need access to high speed. If you have children, you know, you certainly hear that from them if they're in middle school or high school. So it's an issue. It's a challenging issue. You know, what can government's role be? I'm not really sure. I have my own experience with government stepping into that realm and building those systems. That had happened in Crawfordsville before I became mayor, and was not having a good outcome at the time I became mayor, and we were able to get ourselves out of that situation and put it in private hands. So, you know, it's a tough call, but I'm not sure at the end of the day you can convince the taxpayers in cities to pay the bill to run fiber out to these rural areas. I don't see that they're going to look at that as something that they should be doing.
Let me ask about a different way that might happen. You and I talked some time ago on this program about the idea of these micro cell phone towers that then Senator Brant Hirschman attached a little rider to the budget bill a couple of years ago, saying that essentially cell phone companies could do whatever they wanted if cities, and yours was one of the ones that didn't pass a rule saying, now hang on a minute. There was a similar rule passed at the end of this year's legislative session that essentially reinstated Senator Hirschman's rule and took away some of that local authority from local entities to forbid that from happening. And now we've got talk about 5G cell phones coming in the next year or so to the market. Is that a way to solve the problem that Brett is talking about? And does the Indiana regulatory structure help that now?
Well, it is potentially a way. And that's, you know, what we hear today is that, you know, running fiber in the end might not be the answer. Now, that's probably a ways off, but, you know, to have these smaller circuits out there that pick it up wirelessly and then at some point put it on fiber and continue the process, our concern with that legislation and continues to this day is we're not opposed to having that technology in our community. We want that technology in our community. We just want to have a mechanism to ensure that these mega telecommunications companies do it in a responsible manner. Because at the end of the day, when you put something ugly up in the middle of the community and you don't answer to anyone, we hearken back to, again, the rail issue, you know, local elected officials are going to be the ones taking the heat for that, not the people in the Indiana legislature who are off on vacation all summer. They're not there. We are the ones who are going to take those calls from those angry citizens. So we want some local input. We're not opposed to the technology. We think that would be great. We just want to make sure it's done in a responsible manner. And there are different ways of doing it. You can do it the cheap way, throw up a cheap wooden pole and slap it on there, or you can do it the right way and, you know, make it look nicer and make it fit with the community.
I don't know if you know this, but you were on National NPR this morning as part of our reporter Charlotte Tuggle's story about the trains, which you just mentioned. So just in case you hadn't had a chance to hear that.
I did hear it. I had an email from Charlotte earlier and had a chance to click on that and listen to it, and it sounds like the story came out very well.
Let's talk about other amenities topics. You were quoted in a recent story saying that you think the lack of daycare and preschool and school aftercare options is another thing that's hampering your city. Would you expand on that?
Absolutely. You know, we pull together our largest employers every month with the Workforce Roundtable that happened this morning. It just so happens it coincides with the day of this program. But, you know, we heard that again this morning from these employers that the lack of daycare options or childcare options is a serious factor in their inability to get quality workers into the workforce. And, you know, I see it within City Hall here. I have, you know, employees in City Hall. I have some of my department leaders who struggle with the child care issue in this community. We do not have enough child care slots available at any level, let alone making sure we have them at a high quality level. So that has become part of our discussion out of that workforce group. We've created a subgroup that's working specifically on that issue. And my understanding is they're going to come out with some very specific recommendations that you know, will help pair up private industry and local government with some state resources to start addressing this in our community.
So there have been a couple of ways that this has been traditionally done over the years. Either you have aftercare at schools, you have individual businesses that spring up for this specific purpose, for aftercare or for preschool. And then I've seen in recent years a number of businesses where people would work, create their own sort of daycare, aftercare, whatever you want to call it, so that until mom or dad is done with work, the child can go there after school. Does one of these seem more likely than the others in Crawfordsville?
Well, I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all, and I think we're probably going to see some combination of those. We already have a, you know, and what we have a little bit of a mix. I think it will continue to be a combination, but what I do see is that those employers have become more willing to step up and become involved, and although they've not financially committed at this point, I think there's an interest on their part in financially committing to a solution because this problem has risen to the point that it is a serious issue for their workforce. So you know, it will be a combination here, but you know, we've not seen employers really in this community step up to that level yet, and I think we're at that point.
Is it a little bit disingenuous of them to come to your workforce meetings and say, Mayor, this isn't a problem, if they don't have any skin in the game?
Perhaps. You know, I mean, I think it's always fair if someone brings, you know, a problem to our attention to ask them to help identify solutions and maybe bring something to the table as far as identifying, you know, and creating solutions and even funding solutions. So, you know, I in the past, they've not really participated in that, but we've not really had the discussion pulling them all together. And like I said, my sense is that they're willing to put some skin in the game because they realize that, you know, this is an issue that they need to come to terms with.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. Call in your questions at 765-496-1999. Email us, ask@wbaa.org is the address. You're, of course, part of the Wabash Heartland Innovation Network. You and I talked about it late last year when you came to Lafayette for the unveiling of that. The organizers have now put out a survey for cities and for people in those cities to take. I took it for Lafayette and Tippecanoe County this morning just to see how it all worked. And they're trying to judge each city's strengths and weaknesses as seen by the different stakeholders. I wondered, have you taken it yet?
I have taken it, yes.
And what were your impressions?
You know, I don't get it, I guess. You know, I'm not sure I'm following this group. I've met with them on several occasions, including very small, intimate meetings to try to, you know, really understand where they're coming from and really what they're trying to accomplish and how we can all partner together. I don't know. I mean, to see this survey, we didn't push it out on our social media because, to me, it did nothing but confuse the public, and you know, we're in the midst of Stellar, and now we're talking about this, and what does this mean? And ultimately, for me, to ask those kinds of questions of a community, and what would you like to see done in your community to improve these various issues, you know, you need to know that there's some plan or some funding mechanism behind it to make that a reality, and I don't think that exists in this case. From my understanding in my meetings, you know, this funding is pretty much nailed down except for, you know, maybe $10 million of that that would be used for quality of life throughout these counties. Well, if you do the math, that's not going very far. And I don't think there's much left that's not already spoken for that's going to accomplish that. So I'm not in favor of, you know, coming out and building up this hype and you know, making people think that all these great things are potentially going to happen when it's just not possible. You know, for me, if I look at the wind situation, I think it's a fair question to ask: what's the goal here? You know, what are we trying to accomplish? And I've, you know, you frequently hear, well, it's to improve regional prosperity, and that's a wonderful thing. Then I think it's fair to ask how you're going to measure your success. How are you going to measure whether or not you're succeeding at doing that? You know, on what factors do you want to move the needle? And no one has been able to answer that question for me. I've asked it at every meeting. you know, where are you trying to move the needle to measure regional prosperity? What are we trying to influence here, and what are we trying to move forward? And nobody has that answer. So, you know, I'm a little troubled that we're already kind of figuring out how we're going to do this, but yet we don't. We're back to the beginning stages of a survey, which should have been done early in the process, not at this point after they've already been awarded.
When you and I talked some months ago about this, one of your concerns at that time seemed to be that there would be obvious winners and obvious losers in this partnership. Do you think that has come to pass?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you know, I mean, I think the winner in this relationship is clearly Purdue University. You know, this is geared towards Purdue. I mean, I'm not trying to be a pessimist here. I'm trying to be a realist and looking at it from the perspective of my community. I don't see that this is going to do much, if anything, to change the dynamics or improve prosperity in Crawfordsville or even Montgomery County. And when you listen to the presentations about what this can do, it's not focused. It's kind of all over the board. There's talk about these sensors, and there's talk about all these other things. Well, I'm not sure how that really moves the needle on regional prosperity and how we measure that. So I think there's a lot of work left to do. And, you know, I said in the beginning, I'm cautiously optimistic. I hope they figure it out, and I hope that it works, and I hope that, everybody benefits. But I think it has a long, long way to go to get there.
One of the things I think you were alluding to earlier is that everybody might interpret these questions a little bit differently, and so that might be a confusing factor in all of this. I did want to go through a couple of them with you because I'm really curious about your responses. One of the questions says, our downtown areas are thriving, and that's all it says. And it asks you, do you strongly agree, somewhat agree, strongly disagree, somewhat disagree? Where would you put your agreement or disagreement with the idea of our downtown areas are thriving? Where Crawfordsville is concerned?
Well, I think our downtown is very healthy. Is it thriving? Yeah, maybe we're on the verge of that. I don't know. We're pretty close, though. You know, I mean, if you look, there's really not much vacancy in our downtown, and there's been this energizing effect from Stellar, and our Main Street program has done an amazing job of pulling everybody together. So I think our downtown is in really, really solid shape. Now, that's always a matter of perspective, and you can have an outsider who drives through once a week or once a month and says, there's nothing here for me. This is dead. I don't like it. So you're always going to get differing answers there. But I think by most measurements, if you look at occupancy, if you look at activity in the downtown, you look at programming and things that are going on, our downtown is doing very well. And it's interesting to me, if I have to come downtown for anything in the evening now, any evening of the week, it's hard to find a place to park in the evening. And, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, our downtown was deserted after 4 or 5 o'clock. I mean, there was nobody there, nothing happening. And that's changed. There's a lot going on in the downtown. So, yeah, I look at that question, and, you know, it's subjective. It's different to everybody, but I think our downtown's doing well.
Another statement says, I have to leave my community to take advantage of services, purchase products, or patronize businesses that I prefer. This would seem to be the diametric opposite of Brett's question from the beginning of this show. Where do you stand on whether you think people have to leave Crawfordsville to get the things that they want?
That's a mixed bag. You know, it really depends. I mean, I look at my own situation. I can get most of what I need here, but, you know, if you know, a lot of things, I'm going to have to go elsewhere. I mean, you don't have the options here for some of the things you want. And, again, that is driven by consumers. You know, if you're going to get somebody to invest here, a business to come here to offer the things that you want, they have to be reasonably assured that they're going to do well here and make a profit here. And some of that's about shifting the demographics. It's about growing the population. There's all kinds of factors involved, and ultimately about consumer choice. And, you know, I've said this over and over, but these companies are very savvy. They're buying cell phone data. They understand the patterns of everyone, you know, whether you live in Crawfordsville and you go elsewhere to shop, or you live elsewhere and you come to Crawfordsville, they know what that looks like. They know what those numbers are, and they're going to make decisions based on that. So I saw a quote on social media the other day that I thought was very interesting, and somebody had said, you know, Crawfordsville needs to bring in this kind of restaurant. And someone responded, you know, Crawfordsville doesn't choose restaurants. Restaurants choose Crawfordsville. And that's exactly right. It's the same thing for retail businesses. They're going to go where they think they will do well and where they think the consumer will support them.
One more that I wanted to ask you about, because you and I have talked so much about how you build a 21st century workforce in a place like Crawfordsville, and the statement on the survey that asks for your agreement or disagreement says, our community promotes and provides adequate training, technical assistance, or other workforce education to skill up adult workers. What do you think?
Well, I'd say we've been pretty weak there in the past. I think we are in the early stages of addressing that, and we're on our way. We've kind of missed the mark there frequently. You know, right now, this workforce group has come together with local government to really identify those gaps and find ways to really start people on those right paths. And we have to strengthen that. There's no doubt about it. And we have to strengthen our relationship with, you know, the high schools, our relationship with Ivy Tech, and so on, to make sure we give people that opportunity when they need it or when they desire it. I would give us good marks for getting started, but we've lagged there for a number of years.
We've got about 10 minutes left with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton today on Ask the Mayor. Call in your questions at 765-496-1999. Send an email to ask@wbaa.org. So as I was writing these questions this morning, a sort of larger question struck me that I wanted to put to you. And I began to wonder whether cities the size of Crawfordsville and Frankfort might in some ways be exactly the wrong size for today. You know, you're large enough to be a city, obviously, so people have expectations about things like daycare and internet speed. But you are not so large that companies might see a number of people where they think, ah, we can obviously make money here and get a good return on our investment. Is there any truth to my supposition that you think that your size is limiting in a couple of different ways and you're kind of getting hit from multiple sides?
I don't know that I agree with that, you know, and I mean, of course, it's my job to promote a city this size, so maybe my take's different, but, you know, I really look at what's going on today and I think we're the right size. And I base that on, you know, visits we've had recently, like site visits with companies looking to come here and so on. And that's the sense I get from them. We're able to make some things happen in a community this size that just cannot happen in a larger community. Now, they'll have more shopping opportunities and dining opportunities, you know, and quite frankly, those are a short car drive away. But some of the things that really, really matter to people today and increasingly in the next, what we're seeing in the next generation, can happen in a community this size. They cannot really happen in those larger communities. And I'll give you an example. You know, we're working very aggressively in this piece with our community paramedicine program. And that program is proving to have the ability to drastically reduce healthcare costs by lowering readmission rates. So from the 40-50% range of people who are discharged with certain things, you know, they will go back to the ER and back to the hospital and be readmitted. We're lowering that to near zero, and that could have billions of dollars in impact. What we're finding is you can build a system like that in a community our size, and it works. You try to build it in a larger community, and it doesn't work because there are too many silos, too many barriers, and it's very difficult to get everybody to play nicely together and work well together. So we have some huge advantages, and being located next to these larger metropolitan areas helps us capitalize on the smaller community, but yet be close to the larger. So I don't see it as a disadvantage. I see it as an advantage. And you know, people are really looking back to more local say and more local input and that sense of community and wanting to have some skin in the game, if you will. And it's pretty tough to do that in a large city. So we'll have to see how that all plays out with younger people and what they choose. But I'm seeing a shift there is what I'm seeing.
In just our last couple of minutes, I wanted to address a couple other things. Each of the county's three school corporations is slated to get some of those metal detectors that the state recently offered to any school which asked for them. And the schools have said they're going to work with law enforcement agencies to develop plans for how to use those wands. Are the schools, do you think, getting enough resources, though, where they can actually catch people who might have ill intent? Is this enough?
Well, I think they're doing better than they ever have. And again, I know in our case, the three school corporations, the sheriff's office, the city police, and I believe probation have all joined forces and signed a mutual agreement in which they work together to share information about, you know, not only how they're protecting the schools, but share information on maybe students who might be heading down the path of you know, needing help and could be heading down the wrong path, to try to stay ahead of some of these things. And they share it among schools because a lot of times these students, you know, they go from school corporation to school corporation, and it's important that we're able to share that information, and we've seen that play out in the past. So
Can I ask you a quick question about that?
Is it
okay to profile kids like that?
Well, I don't think it's profiling. I think what they're trying to do, the way I understand it, and I'm not participating in those meetings, what they're trying to do is make sure that they are getting the best available resources to those kids, not to say, you know, that we suspect that this student could be a problem, so we're going to isolate him or her and we're going to do all this, but to make sure that we are getting the resources to that student to keep them on the right path. We've identified that, you know, this student has maybe many different difficulties in their lives, and they're under all this pressure, and they're being pulled back and forth. Let's make sure we focus on them and help them get the resources that they need to not only do well, but to succeed. And that's what I see them doing in this situation.
So the law enforcement agencies are giving some counsel on how best to use these new resources. And it seems to me that if you wanted everybody who came through the door each day, that would be an effective procedure. I haven't come across a school anywhere in the state that plans to do that because it takes resources, it takes man hours, it takes time to do that. And in a lot of cases, students are rushing in the door just before their first period class. I wondered if you thought that a community your size, and you don't have any huge, huge schools in the county, might be able to be a pilot for such a thing, because that seems like the way to make effective use of these resources, however limited they might be.
You know, I'm not sure. That's a decision that needs to be left up to the school corporations, the school boards, and law enforcement. But I can tell you, if you think in terms of like an airport, in which you're screening everybody's coming through, that's only as good as your ability to make sure that building is sterile, if you will. That building is, nothing could have gotten into that building overnight, and nothing could have gotten into that building, you know, during the off hours. Otherwise, I mean, I don't think that this accomplishes, you know, any real particular goal. You could be screening everybody at the door every day, but you have deliveries coming in the back door, and the building was open all evening for a sporting event. I don't see that it's that effective.
All right, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time. Seemed like it went quick this month, but I've got lots more to ask you next month,
okay.
Or indeed Emily has more to ask you next month.
Very good. Thank you.
Have a nice day. This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember, you can find all of these shows archived at our website, WBAA.org. Send an email at any time for any of our four mayors to ask@WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.